Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend in the spring sunshine. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, the 10th of March. Coming up, hear from the couple detained in Iran while on a road trip around the world. And Gillingham make it back-to-back home wins in League Two. But first, a Kent Online investigation has uncovered serious flaws with the anti-terror system designed to protect the centre of Canterbury. We found bollards that were installed to stop vehicles getting into the pedestrianised zone either weren't working or could be easily bypassed. Reporter Brad Harper was able to drive his car through the city unchallenged after pressing the intercom before an operator let the bollards down. He's been speaking to Lucy.
So they were installed in 2020 on advice from counter-terror police by Canterbury City Council. They cost more than £750,000 to install, and they are to protect pedestrians from car-related terror attacks. There have been a few over recent months, not in the UK, but there have been a few terror attacks in the US, in Germany. So there has been recent incidents of these sort of attacks. Also, it is to manage who's coming into the city. So the city is obviously very busy with shoppers, school children, people going to work. It's a very busy, pedestrianised area. So these bollards also manage the cars, the vehicles coming in to the city. There are tougher restrictions in place between the busiest times. So between 10:30 and 4 o'clock, that's when there's very tight restrictions on who can come in. But even outside of those areas, you know, you can't cut through the city, or you're not supposed to, rather, cut through the city as someone that wants to get from one side to the other. You have to go round. So, it's to manage traffic as well as security.
What was going through your head when you were driving through and then the bollards just went down for you?
I have to be honest, the first time we drove through, I was laughing because I could not believe it. How I did not have to say anything at all. I just said thank you and drove through. I thought that was, you know, that should not be happening. But afterwards, it became a little bit frustrating, actually, because when we sort of gave the council our findings and said we've identified these problems, they admitted that that was wrong. They retrained their staff. They launched an investigation. They said that the bollards would be fixed. But then when we got through the second and third time, it was frustrating because we'd given them a chance to fix them and sort of toughen up security there, but it was just frustrating that we got let through, you know, the second time and the third time.
The City Council was made aware of the breach in January. The following month, the same thing happened again. Chris Phillips is the former head of the National Counter-Terrorism Security Office, and he's been chatting to Bartholomew from our colleagues at KMTV.
It's so disappointing that huge amounts of money have been spent on protecting the public, and then because they're not operated properly, they're not being used properly, effectively is wiped out. It's such a waste of time and money.
I mean, we've seen instances of, and it's shocking to think about, of cars being driven into crowds even as early as this month over in Germany. These sort of systems are crucial in today's modern age, aren't they?
Well, certainly you have iconic locations, and of course Canterbury is an iconic location, and iconic locations are being attacked, whether it's Christmas markets, whether it's New Orleans, in Bourbon Street. These locations are chosen by terrorists because they are iconic and they want to use vehicles to knock people over. The simple fact is that the risk is there. Someone has obviously realised that the area needs to be protected, should be protected, And enormous amounts of money have been spent putting in a system which would work. Let's be quite frank, if you're going to put that system in, it should work. But it won't work if the barriers are down when they should be up.
This investigation's found that bollards were left down for hours. Council workers were letting vehicles through without doing sort of proper checks. What's the sort of first red flags from your experience of a system like this not really doing its job properly?
Well, usually it's down to the operation and the operators, and it's not always their fault. Let's be quite frank. Quite often, operators are not given enough time or training to do the job they're asked to do, and that needs to be looked into. But if you choose to protect an area, then you should be doing it properly. And of course, you don't get any warning when a terrorist attack is going to happen. It just takes place. And it's too late by the time that you've realised that you haven't got a system in place. There should be a system. There should be strict rules for who can come in and who can go out, when they can go in and when they can go out. And, of course, the system should be in protect mode most of the time, unless that's been agreed otherwise. So it'll be interesting to see what the council's response is as to why the system's not being used properly. If it's down to a lack of resources, manpower, womanpower, whatever, then that needs to be addressed if you're going to make use of the system to protect people.
The authorities say they've launched an investigation and are retraining staff. This is their statement in full.
We are hugely disappointed that a member of our team did not follow the correct procedures when allowing access through the bollards and can only apologise to the public. We are very grateful it has been brought to our attention. As soon as we were told this was the case, we launched an investigation and are retraining all of our staff on the proper protocols so this does not happen again. We work really hard to keep the bollards operating around the pedestrian zone and monitor them in our control room 24 hours a day. We have had a large number of meetings with the manufacturer/installer in an effort to radically improve reliability and are actively exploring our options. Having said that, the bollards are a complex piece of mechanical machinery. The occasional problem is inevitable.
You can also read about Brad's investigation and leave a comment today at Kent Online, or you can send us a message via our socials.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories: and the discovery of a body in the River Thames is being linked to the shooting of a woman outside a pub in Kent on Valentine's Day. 43-year-old Lisa Smith was targeted near the Three Horseshoes in Knockholt last month. The suspect's car was later found abandoned on the QE2 bridge. Investigations found he fell into the water below. A man's died in a suspected hit-and-run involving a motorbike and McLaren supercar on the M2 near Chatham. It happened on the coastbound stretch between junctions 3 and 4 yesterday afternoon. The motorcyclist in his 30s died and the car reportedly left the scene before later being found. A man's been arrested. A sitting-born woman who weaved at high speed through traffic after spotting her husband in a car with another woman has avoided prison. Ellen O'Reilly crashed into the back of his vehicle before confronting the pair in April last year. The 33-year-old from Red Wing Avenue in Eyewade admitted dangerous driving. She's been given a suspended sentence and 12-month driving ban. Meantime, a court's heard how a drink driver was found asleep in his car after crashing into a tree following a party in Maidstone. Police were called to Greenway Court Road in the early hours last August. A 23-year-old's been ordered to pay more than £300 and has had 10 points put on his licence. Next today, and a couple have revealed how they were blindfolded and held for more than 2 days in Iran after travelling from Kent back to New Zealand. Pete and Janelle O'Keefe decided to go on a world tour back to their homeland after spending 10 years living in Faversham. They were accused of entering a forbidden zone and eventually released after setting off a locator beacon which alerted their daughter. Well, Pete and Janelle have been speaking to reporter Max Chesson.
We came in on the north and travelled all the way down. We've been there about 6 days. Iran is unbelievably beautiful and unbelievably friendly. We were stopped so often by people tooting us and waving us, and people saying, please be my guest, come to our house. Complete strangers we'd never met would offer us accommodation and food in their house. It's amazing.
So, yeah, you're detained in Iran because they've alleged you've gone in a forbidden zone, and you obviously say this isn't the case. Other vehicles were passing nearby. So I mean, talk us through how that felt in that moment, that initial shock to be stopped in that way.
Well, no, there was no major issue at that stage. There was an army patrol popped up, and we thought this is going to be a routine stop. They'll have a look at our passports, they'll look at our driver's licenses, and like the other cars that were going past us at this stage, we'll carry on. But that kind of didn't happen because all of a sudden we were told to park on the side of the road, and two of the soldiers cocked their rifles, put them at the high port towards us. So we weren't going to go anywhere. And I thought, this is possibly a little bit more serious than the adventure I was thinking it was going to be.
And then you've got the officials, saying tourism, terrorism. When does it begin to sink in even further? You've got the jeeps screeching up to the checkpoint as well. They take all your documents, your phone, money. I mean, what sort of happens from that point?
The thing is that the guy who we found out later was an army officer doing the tourism terrorism. I think he was just testing the waters, and I was quite happy to smile and tell him it's not tourism, no terrorism at all. But it wasn't until that army jeep came flying to a screaming halt with the major, who we believe was a major, jumped out, started screaming at us as a team, and then he just stared at us and he said, "You will follow." So we thought, you got some guys with firearms loaded. It seemed to me that we would be a good idea to follow him. So we kind of did, and we followed in our car.
And obviously it keeps escalating, doesn't it? Because your access to the New Zealand embassy was denied. You weren't allowed to talk to anyone outside, and you ended up being interrogated blindfolded. Is that right?
Correct. No one knew where we were. That was the disconcerting part.
What are they asking you when you're being interrogated blindfolded as well? I mean, that must be really scary.
Yeah, it is for the simple fact that I lost one of my senses, and that all I now was going on was, smell and hearing, and not being able to see, not knowing what they were doing. Or, as I said to Janelle at one stage, if they hit me, don't react because that's what they want. Now, I didn't know whether they're going to do that or not, but I was sitting there waiting, and I was tense, waiting for them to get for me to get whacked.
And a lot of the issue seemed to be surveillance cameras, didn't it? Well, the allegations of surveillance cameras were really they're
Absolutely.
not.
They are very they're very nervous over there of people taking pictures and security. So this our vehicle, a RAV4, it has a backing camera on it. So you put it in reverse, you can see out the back. It also has a front camera that if you get close for parking, you can see where the other car is. Two of the soldiers spent an hour with their finger over the camera at the front and the back until they got some black tape.
I'm guessing just anything you were saying to them was not going through. They were not grasping anything what you were trying to say then. They had their minds set on what
They were
they
grasping it.
They were, but they were asking multiple times. And I think the multiple times the questions were to see if it
Great.
was truth or not.
And that's a legitimate tactic. I've used it myself when I was in the police, just to try and catch people out in lies. So I knew exactly what they were doing. And prior to going on this trip, Janelle and I had discussed and pre-planned what may have happened should we get into this situation, not expecting it to at all. So when it happened, we started to put in the disruptors that we'd spoken about. So, for example, when they ask a question, ask them to say it again because we didn't understand. Ask them to say it again because we didn't quite understand, which is giving us time to formulate the answer. But also, they then ask the question in a different way. Or we would ask to go to the bathroom. So they'd have to stop the interview, we'd go to the bathroom. They must have thought my bladder was just absolutely atrocious because it's about every 5 minutes I was wanting to have a bathroom break. However, it was a disruptor so that when we came back, they normally started on a new tranche of questions.
How hard is it to keep your composure while you're in that environment as well?
It's incredibly hard. Make no bones about it that you can do all the training and you can do all the scenarios. But when you're in a real life situation like that, not knowing what is going to happen, we had no idea what the outcome was going to be or what they were going to do. And that was probably the most scary thing.
For me too, I didn't really believe that they would just take people off the street and put them somewhere. I thought, they surely they must have done something for them to actually be taken by the police over in Iran. But that's not the case. Because, we had done nothing, absolutely nothing that would have been considered wrong in any sense of the word. And yet here we were in this situation. And it's like Pete said, we didn't know what was going to happen. And I think that was the most scariest part
Fear of the unknown.
is, yeah, understanding that we hadn't done anything wrong, and yet here we were in the situation where we had no control. We were unable to do any sort of communication to anyone.
The Foreign Office advises against all travel to Iran.
Kent Online reports.
Small boat asylum crossings to Kent from France during March have been continuing. 1,838 people have made the journey so far this month. Home Office figures show 174 in three vessels arrived in the county on Saturday. A teenager who suffered brain damage after having a cardiac arrest in an Ashford park has been transferred back to Kent. Ruby Boyton had been treated in London since collapsing in Bridgefield Park last May. The 16-year-old is now being looked after at the Kent and Canterbury. Her family are hoping to adapt their home for when she's able to return. There are concerns over proposals to merge two education trusts in Kent. Parents have been asked what they think about Rain and Mark Education Trust joining forces with Veritas Multi Academy Trust, which is based in Deal. Some have branded it a conflict of interest as the same person heads up both. Well, the trust boards will now decide what happens, with a decision due before the end of March. Topless women in makeshift milking machines have staged a protest in Canterbury. It was all part of a global anti-dairy farming demo. 20 performance art events took place at the same time over the weekend on International Women's Day. An imaginative play cafe set up by two friends is officially opening at Chatham Dockside today. Georgie Bleak and Steph Richard came up with the idea after struggling to find somewhere to go themselves. The business partners both have two children under the age of three, and they've been speaking to our reporter Ellie Hodgson.
These years between maternity and them going to school, there's not much for the parent. You go to soft plays, you sit on cold floors, you have a paper cup with a coffee, and sometimes you can feel just not as looked after in anywhere you go, really, as a parent. So we wanted to build something that was beautiful, that people would appreciate, but also everything one level, so you're not worried if you've got multiple children that one is climbing up something and doing something else.
And creating a community. And for those, mums, first-time mums who are nervous going out and about, it's kind of creating a safe space for them as well to come and be with like-minded people. And yeah,
it can be quite a scary and sometimes lonely journey, especially if you don't have a huge community around you who are popping in to help all of the time. I mean, that's one of the reasons our tagline is because it takes a village, because we want to be here and we want people who come to feel that they can just go, oh, can you help a minute, and we're there.
And everyone belongs. You kind of lose yourself in motherhood, don't you? So we just want to create a space where
100%.
everyone belongs here. It doesn't matter where you're from, who you are, everyone belongs.
Yeah.
And so how did you take that idea to a reality? When did you start looking for this venue and then talking through the whole process to getting it to what I see in front of me today?
Well, it was last year, wasn't it?
Late summer.
Yeah. We sat down. I said, we've got an idea. George said, let's see it. And we kind of went from there. We started writing a business plan. We started doing research. We've done a lot of parent research with both of our NCT groups, sending them questions. What would you want to see? What would you like to see? What would you like to eat? What would you like to drink? And we took all of those ideas and put them together and thought, right, what can we build from here? And it was a play village. And then because of our previous experience, I said, well, it has to be beautiful. It has to be floral. The parents have got to love it as well.
The cafe is going to be open from 9:30 in the morning till 6 p.m. Monday to Friday, and then 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. at the weekends.
Kent Online reports.
Council bosses in Swale are being criticised for spending £21,000 on 60 new chairs. The Verco leather seats were bought for the council chamber last August. Residents have questioned why a cheaper option wasn't used, as the authority's dealing with a £1.7 million gap in its budget. A spokesperson says the old chairs weren't suitable and the new ones were the best option. Charities across Kent are set to benefit after a secret millionaire left them money. Hilda Levi from Whitstable died in 2022 at the age of 98. It's now been revealed she'd left £1.4 million in her will. A Kent business has been named as the best boutique hotel in the UK. The Rose Inn deal is part of the Times and Sunday Times Best Places to Stay guide. It's been praised for helping transform the coastal town into a holiday hotspot. And a 16th century barn near Sandwich could be turned into a boutique wedding venue. There are plans to restore the Grade 2 listed Chequer Court in Ash. It's hoped it will host up to 26 weddings a year.
Kent Online Sport.
Football and Gillingham have recorded back-to-back home wins for the first time since September. They beat promotion-chasing Bradford City in League 2 at Priestfield at the weekend. Defender Connor Masterson got the goal after returning from injury and replacing Maxima. He spoke to us after the final whistle.
It's the best feeling in the world, yeah. Just to hear the ball back at the net and the Gill supporters screaming, it was beautiful.
I think it's nearly a year since you last scored. I think it's March the 9th, 2024.
Okay.
Against Trent, that's be nice.
Yeah. Jeez, it's been a while, but yeah, listen, just buzzing. Brilliant win against obviously a really good side in Bradford, and I just thought the team was outstanding to a man. We worked our socks off.
Yeah, they've gone on their feet, aren't they? I mean, you've given absolutely everything to the course today, and actually restricted Bradford, who were second. They could have gone top today, so very, very little.
Yeah, it just shows the quality we have when we're on it, because that is, like you said, they're top of the league if they win today, but we weren't going to let that happen today. And I just thought, to a man, I thought the lads were brilliant.
Talk me through the goal, because I think the corner came in, yeah. I think Andy might have missed it, and he tracked it almost straight away. Turn and finish, just talk me through it.
It was actually Robbie.
Oh, was it Robbie?
Yeah, it was Robbie. Robbie said, I'll go from post, and I said, right, I'll go in the middle, and literally went past him, and I just seen it coming to my feet, and I knew he was there on my left side, so I had to take a touch and just get it out of my feet, and I just said, I'm going to smash it, and luckily it went in.
Knowing you as I do, I know you've been frustrated when you've been injured to watch on from the sidelines. But I guess now you're back.
Yeah.
Obviously you scored today. You want to stay in the team now. It's three centre halves, and there's a lot of good defenders vying for those places.
100%. I know. Like, I've played a lot with Maxime, and I've learned a lot from Maxime, and obviously it's great to be back, but I know how it feels to be taken out as well, and I just want to say, not, I just feel sorry from the way, but obviously I have to go and do my job because that's football.
The result means the Gills stay 19th in League 2. Let's also get the thoughts of manager John Coleman.
The fans could see the passion and the effort of the players today and the willingness to work for the shirt, which as a football fan, that's probably all you require, really. And I'm glad we've got that back. And I'm glad we've got that relationship back with the home fans. To win some home games on the spin, I felt it was never going to happen, but it has happened, and so we've got to try and now lift the jinx of the away wins. But we've got to be mindful that we want to make this a fortress, and the fans play a big part in that, and they did today. You know, they stayed with us right from the start to the end. They stayed right with us. It was brilliant, and that's what we want. But we want the players to have that manage with the fans. And we have had a really, really taxing time. You know, and a lot of players have played a lot of minutes. And so, you know, we might, with us not having a midweek game, I think some of the lads deserve a well-earned rest.
Staying with football, and Folkestone Invicta manager Andy Drury has left the club after 15 months in charge. The news followed their 2-1 win over Bognor Regis yesterday, with the side mid-table in the Isthmian Premier League. On to rugby, and Ken's Ben Earl scored a try for England in their Six Nations victory over Italy. They won 47-24 at Twickenham, giving themselves still a chance of winning the tournament. England are currently second in the standings and face Wales in the final match of the competition on Saturday. today. Ice hockey, and it was a mixed weekend for Kent's Invicta Dynamos. They lost 11-1 to Slough Jets on Saturday before beating Streatham Redhawks 3-2 last night. And England's first dedicated curling rink in Tunbridge Wells is reopening. The facility that used to be known as Fenton's Rink originally opened in 2004 but closed during the pandemic. It's been upgraded with a new lounge, bar, cafe and seating. The ice rink has been insulated and is more energy efficient. That's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials and you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. Whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. If you use the promo code Nicola Everett, or one word at the checkout, you get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.